Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the All by the Popcorn podcast. I'm Alessandra.
And I'm Emily.
And today we are talking about another Oscar-nominated, hopefully, movie called The Holdovers that came out last year.
Oh yeah, weren't the nominations supposed to come out already?
No, they come out on the 22nd or something like that, like next week.
Oh, this article I read was hella wrong.
Really?
I thought it said like between the 11th and the 15th, and I was like, it is the 17th.
Tuesday. It's on Tuesday.
All right.
Next Tuesday. Right. Which actually this episode will be coming out after the the nominations, so.
Oh yeah, so don't get mad at us for not knowing who the nominations are, because we are recording this early.
Yeah. So The Holdovers, it is an Alexander Payne movie. I believe the only other Alexander Payne movie that I have seen is Sideways.
Yes, I think me as well. I'm pretty sure I've seen that movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let me look, because I have seen some of his other movies. I think I've seen The Descendants a while ago.
I've heard great things about that movie and I just never watched it.
Nebraska. I believe I watched maybe half of Nebraska.
Okay.
But didn't see Downsizing.
Nope, did not.
But yeah, I mean, Sideways is good, is great. That like changed the face of like, wine in America. It actually like really impacted the way people think about Pinot Noir. So I think that, you know, coming out of that and kind of knowing Paul Giamatti has already worked with this director, it's kind of great to see him again, many years later. I mean, yeah. Sideways was all the way back in 2004. So 20 years later.
Yeah. We love Paul Giamatti in this household. Big Fat Liar.
You're just, the first one you go to is Big Fat Liar.
How could I not?
I know, absolutely. He turns blue.
This man is in a billion and five things.
Okay? I know, it's so true.
Of course the first thing I'm going to think of is Big Fat Liar.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan too. And he won the Golden Globe for, I think, best comedy performance or something, and best actor, and so he like brought his Golden Globe to the In-N-Out afterwards, and so people just like saw him there with the Golden Globe eating In-N-Out.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh, Paul Giamatti was in San Andreas, Alessandra. We watched that movie.
Oh, we fucking sure did. I mean, obviously I've seen like a million things that Paul Giamatti has been in, but
oh my god, he's in so many things.
He's a huge highlight in this. I mean, it's basically a cast of three, which is Paul Giamatti, Divine Joy Randolph, and Dominic Sessa. And I didn't know anything about this movie. I actually saw a trailer for it watching another movie, like, I don't know, maybe like 4 months ago or something. And it was like a horrible trailer. Like, I did not like the trailer at all. And I was like, I don't even want to see this movie because of how bad that trailer was.
That really goes to show you how important trailers are and how much they could either, like, it's so crazy how some trailers are nothing like how the movie actually is, or it does absolutely nothing for the movie and makes no one excited to see it. I don't think I ever watched a trailer for this. I don't normally watch trailers. If I do, probably like you, I saw it while I was in theaters, but I honestly don't even think I saw a trailer for this going to see something else. I really don't. I didn't even know this movie existed until like a couple weeks ago when like it when like the Oscar when like the Oscar nominations and stuff were coming up. Like I didn't even know this movie was out. But yeah, this movie gave me like Breakfast Club vibes.
Oh yeah.
And that might be why I liked it so much.
Oh yeah. This movie was delightful, okay? Absolutely.
I loved it. Delightful.
It was so good.
I'm really glad it wasn't depressing because I just did not want to have to deal with that today.
It had its moments. Like it like these characters are definitely not happy people, but yes, this movie was not just real. The tagline on this poster is discomfort and joy.
Because three people who do not want to spend the holidays together are forced to spend the holidays together.
Yes. So for people who don't know what this movie is about, I said Breakfast Club because it's basically about students who have to stay at the school for the holidays. Like, they aren't able to go home. They didn't get permission to, you know, go with any of their friends, and they're not going home to see their parents over the Christmas break, over the holiday break. And so
boys boarding school.
Yes, boys boarding school. And so they have to stay at the school for 2 weeks during the break and be basically babysat by faculty, by a faculty member.
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens to be this ancient history teacher played by Paul Giamatti, and then also the head cook played by Divine Joy Randolph. So,
which, and if Mary didn't go, who was gonna feed them?
Well, like, I think that she just was sticking around, like that. Okay. That was her. Just, that was her plan.
If it wasn't her, someone else would have.
Yeah, I feel like okay. somebody would have figured out how to feed them, but okay. So at first there's a few kids left, and you know there's some
quite a few. There's like six of them or something.
Yeah, you know they're all kind of like misfits. One of them's just a real shithead. The other one's like a really really rich like rebel kid with long hair. A Korean kid and then a Mormon kid. So like. They're just totally mismatched children. And
yeah, was it Teddy Koontz? Was he the asshole?
Oh, that guy was
yes.
So yes. mean.
I see your face. He like would pick on everyone. Like no one was safe from this little snot. He just oh god, he was terrible. And him and Angus like hated each other.
Yeah. Angus was so
such an instigator.
Yeah, he was an instigator. He was not afraid to push buttons as well. And, you know, he was kind of a refreshing character because he was kind of a little shithead too, but he had like a heart of gold. It was like, he was just like a young, you know, he acted like quite young. He acted like he was like 16, 15 years old, you know, like just really outspoken and rebellious and kind of angsty.
He was cute. We kind of learn that, you know, all these boys that were held over, you know, had like kind of a sad reason. Like one of them was kind of stupid. I think Jason Smith was the one where his father just wanted him to cut his hair.
Yeah.
And he refused. And so it was like it was a battle of who would cave first. Uh-huh. Is my son going to cut his hair or is the dad going to come pick him up in his helicopter and take him skiing because he just doesn't care? Like it's just. So it's stupid shit like that, and then it's like, and there's like some more sad stuff like I think Yijun Park, like his family was in Korea and they just didn't want him to travel there by himself, so it's just, you know, he was just stuck there.
Yeah, it's really sad, and then he like cries in the middle of the night, but like Angus is there and he's like, hey dude, it's okay, like we'll change your sheets in the morning, you're gonna be all right. Don't let the other guys see you.
Yeah. And then we learn pretty early on that Angus has his mom remarried. I think we assume his father is dead. That is what we are told at first.
Yeah.
And his mom is remarried, or she's, you know, seeing someone. He has a stepfather. And oh my God, like this part made me so mad, because they're like, oh, you know, they got married and haven't had time to go on their honeymoon. It's been literally months, and they chose Christmas.
Yeah.
To have a honeymoon, and purposefully didn't take Angus home for the holidays. Like,
it's horrible. Like, Angus is like,
it's terrible.
So excited to go to St. Kitts, to go to like a tropical place, to get out of this snow, this cold, you know, Western Mass snow. And it's just like, he calls, his mom calls him. She's like, sorry, like, we don't want you there. You're just going to have to stay at school. It's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
It's just so devastating. Like, this place seems stressful enough, and you know, the kids just want to get away for a little bit, like they deserve, and he's just stuck there, and his whole vacation is just ruined.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of saw this. Once all the kids leave with the rich guy, Jason, they all get permission to go on a ski trip with Jason and stay with his family, because I'm sure they have like a mansion. And,
oh, for sure.
You know, but the only one that's left is Angus, because his mom can't be reached. So it's then it's just the three main characters, and they have to just sort out what to do for the holiday. And, you know, they really just butt heads a lot of the time. And especially since Angus is the only kid left, like, Paul, he's trying to, like, punish him, like, by saying, like, you know, you can't just do anything you want. And he's like, you have detention now. And he's like, I literally, like, I'm the only one. I'm not just going to do detention because, like, you say so. And, you know, they kind of have, like, a cute bond. Like, they eventually go to the holiday party that another teacher puts on, played by Carrie Preston. Do you recognize her?
Yeah, of course I do. She's from True Blood.
Yeah. And at first it seems like she's into Paul, but turns out she's just being nice. Like, she already has a husband.
Yeah, so Paul Giamatti's character is like this hard-ass teacher that all the students hate because he's strict and he's not an easy grader. And he's so grumpy, and he just doesn't give the kids a break at all. Like, they do everything wrong. He can do no wrong. He's the teacher. He does everything, like, everything he does is correct, and he can't do anything wrong. And so it's just this very, like, battling of personalities, basically, at first, until they kind of find a common ground and they can connect in a way. And you know, and that is one of the reasons why I love The Breakfast Club so much. Because it's like, you get all these people together who seemingly have nothing to do with each other, but then they have everything to do with each other. And they can find a common ground. And Mary is, she is grieving because her son was lost in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is why. And she feels guilty for leaving the school, because she feels like she's still at that point in her grief where she thinks that leaving and having a good time is not fair to Curtis, her son. I believe her son's name was Curtis.
Yeah.
And so she stays back so that she can hang out with these two rapscallions.
Yeah. It's nice because, like, at first it's just, again, she also kind of is, she's going through her own thing, and the kids are, like, especially that Coons one that was just being a little shit, and at the table he was like, said something really mean. Smack. Yeah, he did. He said something, like, mean about how the food sucks and that, like, she shouldn't be this way or just because her son died or something, and Paul Giamatti's, like, gets so riled up, like, she, like, throws the spoon or something, and he's like, you have no idea what this lady is going through. And it is just such a great little, like, burst from him. He just has these, like, incredible... Yeah. And it's all, like, kind of funny. Like, it's all just a little bit hilarious whenever these kids, like, try to defy him. And he gets, like, really riled up about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, they end up... getting close enough for Christmas and kind of consoling on each other and getting, you know, Paul gets them both like the same book for Christmas. And
and then we find out later he has like a box of them just like in his room.
Just to give people, I guess.
Like just to give anyone who will take one.
So funny.
Oh, goodness.
There's a lot of really great details in this movie, like the set and the locations and the costumes, you know, the acting is really good. It is just like such a level above a lot of indie movies, I think, that we see. Like, you can really tell the attention to detail. It just has that slightly higher budget indie film feeling.
Yeah, it felt super simple, yet it was just packed with all this extra love and care.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I really think that the sets were really, they really, really helped to make this movie feel truly in, like, 1970s Western Massachusetts. Like, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but...
You sent me that article of all the places they shot. Apparently the school was shot in, like, various buildings, like, that were not the same place. Which was crazy because, like, it felt very cohesive. I mean, we were at all different parts of this school, and it all felt like the same place.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was awesome.
I mean, not sure how easy or hard that is to do, but I mean, I felt like we were at the same place the whole time because, you know, obviously that's how they filmed it. But
well edited, for sure.
Very well edited, and definitely saw the commons in there.
Yeah.
I've been there.
There were so honestly, most of the Boston shots, I knew where they were. And they were even places that I've been in that theater. They shot at the Somerville Theater, like inside the theater. The outside of the theater is like, it was really close to where my wedding was. And that's like on the street where my parents stayed. That's where the Airbnb was. You know, yeah, they walk in the common, they're in Somerville, seeing the buildings there. And I'm like, this is great because I remember them filming this. And I, my friends were like, oh, they're filming this Paul Giamatti movie down the street from us today. And so I went up there and I missed it. It was like in the morning. I was like, damn it. Like, I totally missed it. But I think they were shooting inside the Somerville Theater. And I was just like, okay, well, I was so close. I mean, they've been filming a lot of stuff around me lately, and I'm like, I wish I just knew ahead of time so that I could go and watch them film.
I know there's got to be like a Reddit page or like a Twitter account that talks about, like, that knows the info before it's happened.
Yeah, sometimes they will post, you know, because obviously they have to put like little don't park here signs because of filming. Oh, yeah. So I've seen those before in New York, but I have not seen them in Boston. And they're usually up and gone so quickly. But, you know, pretty great to see this dreariness, especially literally there's snow and ice outside right now. It looks just like it does in the movie. A little less snow, but like, it felt like that today. Like, the whole thing is like just dreary snow crunch. You know, it's beautiful in its own way.
Yeah, definitely don't want to lose your mittens.
Yeah. Oh, that shit kid threw them in the river.
I mean, he still had one. And even though he only had one, he still threw the second one. I was like, well, keep one. You could use one.
I'm sure that the other guy's dad would have given him one anyway. Give him another pair.
Oh, yes. I'm sure he got many pairs once he got to the ski mansion.
Paul Giamatti's character starts to like soften up a bit. Like he starts to show who he really is and show that he once was somebody who was more vibrant than he is now. And kind of like showing that and slowly showing that to Angus really gets him to trust him. And it's great to like unearth these stuff about these characters as you're watching it and like getting more and more close to them as well, like watching the movie. I mean, I think the writer David Hemmingson did like an incredible job. Like he's just done like mostly TV shows and stuff before this. So,
oh really?
Yeah, like he wrote like TV series. Like, just episodes. And he wrote the whole series of Whiskey Cavalier.
Don't trust the bee in Apartment 23!
It's great. Like, this doesn't be, like, his first feature film, because, yeah, you know.
Maybe it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, buddy. You did it. Maybe get a nom.
Oh, to him.
Yeah,
what? Saying that, too.
Like, not you.
Not
talking
no,
about
not
David Hemmingson.
I know. Oh my goodness.
Also, I think a really pretty breakout performance from Dominic Sessa, the guy who plays
what else is this guy in?
Angus. Nothing else. This is the first thing that he's been in.
Literally nothing. He was so good.
Oh my god, it's great. I liked his
so good.
He kind of sounded like he had the cadence of Paul Giamatti sometimes, and I liked his line delivery.
Yeah, yeah, I liked his line delivery a lot.
Yeah, when we see good kid actor, I mean he's not like a child, but like the other kids were pretty good too. Like, when you get those good takes and you get that good attention, good directing, you know, especially with kids, you could really, really notice it. Like, versus ones where they're not as good. So.
Oh, completely. Completely. I also liked how this movie had a little bit of humor to it. It was like sometimes in the line delivery, like when... Like when Angus pops his shoulder out.
Oh my god! Yes, that's exactly what I was going to talk about. That was so funny.
I was like, "Oh my gosh!" And I mean, Paul Giamatti's just. I think he's funny, and he doesn't even try to be. Like no. He just is. Like him just huffing around the school, like chasing after Angus, like was so delightful, and. And Mary just being sassy to both of them was it was a really good trio. Like they had
good chemistry.
Really great chemistry.
He lies at the doctor's office, like his arm is so popped out of the socket, and
oh gosh, it is.
They're like, can we just like skip this insurance stuff because, you know, like my dad's here and I only get to spend so much time with him.
Yeah. And where did he get his money from? Like he had this money on him, and I was like, where?
No, his mom gave it to him for Christmas.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Yeah. She sent him a letter. A Christmas.
Oh, that's right. The letter with the money in it.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that much money. I was like, enough to pay a medical bill?
I think the medical bill was before, but I think they might have just pulled their money together.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, and when they took him out for burgers, and they kept saying Miller. What was it? Miller Light.
Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. He kept wanting to drink this whole movie. Yeah. They tried to get that ice cream with the cherry, with the brandy on it at the restaurant.
Yeah. And it was called Cherry's Jubilee or something. What was it called?
They couldn't give it to him because it had alcohol on it, and he's a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was there's a lot of very sweet details in this and great performances. I just really enjoyed watching it, and you know, I didn't really notice like too much, like all of the music to me was just music from the era, from like 1960s and 70s, right? I didn't really remember like a score. There might have been. I just remember just like all of the 70s music, you know, like Cat Stevens and stuff.
Yeah, it's hard for me to remember a score in general, but I really don't remember hearing too much music from this movie. If it was, like very soft and subtle.
Yeah, well, there was like the pop music, and then too much extra. But yeah, I'm going to look at some of these trivias if we want to take a break before I do trivia.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, we are back. The first one here says many of the scenes were filmed at Fairhaven High School in Fairhaven, Massachusetts in February 2022. During the school's February break, at this time, the area received a snowstorm to the delight of the film crew, since many of the scenes took place during a snowstorm. They took full advantage of the weather and the snow. You see in the film is from an actual snowstorm. I would think so. The whole thing is filled with snow. It would have cost... It's difficult to fake that. Like, you have to bring in snow machines and things that are, like, make a bunch of things that look far away, like it's covered in snow. It's a little bit difficult to do that.
Yeah, I remember seeing on, I think it was on TikTok or something, there was a clip from, I don't know, a Hallmark movie or some cheap holiday movie where it was supposed to be snow on the ground and it was literally just like a white blanket.
Yeah.
It was on the ground.
It's really, exactly.
It was not snow.
So this Dominic Sessa, this is the second one, the second trivia. So this, just for context, Dominic Sessa was born on the 25th of October, 2002. Okay. It says in one of the scenes, Angus calls home. Dominic Sessa flubbed a take because he didn't know how to dial and had to be shown how. It hadn't occurred to anyone that he had never used a rotary phone before.
Because he's a wee babe.
I mean, he's not that young. I mean, he was born in 2002.
Oh, don't even tell me that. 2002? He's a child.
Yeah. Yes, but he's not like a baby.
No, he's not a baby. He's not a baby.
Okay. Entire movie was shot in practical locations, no sets or sound stages. It's pretty great. Oh, this is really interesting because I was going to ask you what you thought about this. Even though the movie features a heavy film look reminiscent of the 1970s, it was entirely shot digitally on the Arri Alexa Mini. All the hallmarks of celluloid film, like film grain, halitation dirt, and Gateweave were added in post-production.
Wait, so what does that mean?
So, you know how at the beginning of the movie, you could really tell they were using all the old logos and it was, you know, shaky, crackly, grainy, looks like a 1970s film, not shot on digital. And throughout the movie, it kind of has that grainy quality, has that kind of speckles, flatness to it that film typically has. And it says that that was actually not shot on film, but actually shot with digital.
And then added that graininess later.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I don't think I too much noticed that. It definitely felt like flat, like visually, but like not too, like, I don't know, popping out at you or like too, like very dimensional. But I mean, I don't think I really noticed that much.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting, like, because it was a period piece, it had the period piece feeling with the film as well. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of fun. I think we've seen other things try and like emulate that, but this is just really trying to like use the titles, use everything that makes it look the most like it's actually from 1970.
Okay.
Dominic Sessa had only acted in stage plays at his alma mater, Deerfield Academy in Deerfield, Massachusetts, where they partially shot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. this one is funny. Paul Hunnam's Lazy Eye was Paul Giamatti's idea, and it started out as a prank on co-star Dominic Sessa before it being incorporated into the script.
Oh, really?
He's like, wait. They were just taking pot shots at each other the whole time, and he's like, so which eye should I look at?
Yeah. I've always wondered.
It's good.
So good. It was so sweet when Paul took the fall for Angus at the end there, so he wouldn't get kicked out of school.
Yeah. It was so a very sweet ending, almost a little bit too sweet for me.
But, too sweet?
You know,
I mean, it's just a little bit for Paul. He lost his job.
Oh, I know. It just neatly
tied up. He's not actually certified or credentialed. He probably can't find a teaching job anywhere else.
It just tied up in a little bow at the end, and you know, that was nice. It was very good, and I think because the whole part of the whole movie before, to me, was not as sweet, so that's why it could be okay, like, you know, compared to like Coda or something, which had that like emotional sweetness like running through the whole thing. It was almost too much.
Yeah.
And also, like, with movies that we, you know, like, for example, Rocket Science that we watched recently, that had that kind of indie film whimsy that so many early indie films had in, like, the, you know, early to mid-2000s, that, like, that just really grate on me in 2024. This one did not have that. Like, it did not grate on me. It was exactly the right amount of small indie film feeling to me, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a lot in the direction, a lot in the production, and trying to, like, kind of make something that's going to be worthy of being nominated for an Oscar. Like, you don't know what you're making sometimes, and I think the final product was really good.
Yeah. Here's a trivia of what you already said earlier, but David Hemmingson's feature film screenwriting debut.
Oh!
He's only written and produced television shows and made for TV movies. But this is his first screenplay that's been premiered in theaters.
Yes! I love it. Oh, I'm going to read this one. In 2023, Alexander Payne spoke about the films he screened for the crew for inspiration. In the Somerville Theater in Boston, they were kind enough to let me screen 6 or 7 prints of films, 70s movies for the cinematographer, the production designer, the costume designer, and also for Dominic Sessa, because he hadn't really seen those movies, and I wanted him to get a sense of the movie he was about to be in. I ran The Graduate from 1967, The Landlord from 1970, Harold and Maude, 1971, The Last Detail, 73, Klute, 71, Paper Moon, 73, and All the President's Men, 76. We weren't trying to be consciously emulate the look and feel of any single one of those films, but we all wanted to splash around in the films of our contemporaries, and we had been making a movie then. I feel like the Somerville Theater would be like, oh my god, Alexander Payne, of course you can watch these 70s movies. For like, we're just gonna let you have the entire day to yourself. We don't give a shit. We can have the week.
Yeah, of course we'll close the theater for you.
My god, Alexander Payne, you don't even have to ask once. We'll do it at yeah. all.
I want to check out this theater now.
Yeah, it's cute. It's at Davis Square. I've been to see a movie there several times. I think I'm going to have my birthday party there. I'm excited.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Can you like rent out a theater for your birthday?
Yes, you can. They have like a small one. And it doesn't cost that much.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti claimed it was difficult to get the schedule for shooting right since Alexander Payne wanted to film in winter using real snowfalls and not use artificial flakes.
Yeah.
I mean, so when they were in Boston, there was snow everywhere, and I'm like trying to remember if they shot this in 2022 in February. I'm trying to remember what days and stuff we had snow, because we really were, the last couple years have been severely lacking in snow. So they must have been just right on the money with the only time that there was snow on the ground for longer than a day. Yeah. Like yeah. that, it's crazy. Because we really have not. Yeah, they really did a good job.
This one's interesting. It says, so it looks like when the movie first came out, a lot of people were calling it like a cozy Christmas movie.
Yeah,
and there's Alexander a lot of Christmas Payne movies. Didn't like that. Like he's hoping that it won't be considered like a Christmas film, that it'll kind of like just be its own thing. And I definitely do, even though this takes place during Christmas, like this is not a holiday movie that I would watch during the holidays. Like,
he said he finds that label nauseating.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
That's a little dramatic, but...
There was a lot of Christmas songs in this. Like, a lot of choir boys singing. It even started the movie with choir boys singing, like, a Christmassy song. Like...
That's true.
It was, like, so many Christmas songs were playing throughout this movie. I felt the Christmas spirit, but... You know... That's because people were connecting, and that's really what Christmas is about.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on over to the plot keywords?
Let's do it.
All right. We've got... Jeez. We've got year 1970, year 1971, 1970s, teacher, boarding school.
Whoa, Jesus.
Why were there three that had to do with the date?
I don't know why that's like right in the beginning. That is crazy.
I know. It's like, do these things get like upvotes and that's why like they end up in the front? Like it just...
I don't know how it works, man.
Yes, I think it is. Like people say it's helpful. And the ones at the very front have more votes, have more helpful votes than the rest of them. That's dumb.
Okay, this movie got an 82 Metascore with 52 positive reviews, 4 mixed reviews, and 0 negative reviews. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 100s.
Oh my god, I need to just have these tabs open before I'm frantically clicking. Hold on.
I know. Now that dumb Metacritic has changed. We're still hating on you about that Metacritic. It's ridiculous.
God, I have to do like 15 clicks just to get somewhere. Okay. Okay. Here we go. 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 Are you going to count? How many 100s are there?
There's six.
Six of them. Yes.
And the lowest is a 40 from the Los Angeles Times.
Ah, Los Angeles. Why are you hating? Let's see. The Holdovers is a flat, phony, painfully diagrammatic movie masquerading as a compassionate, humane one.
Oh.
Wow, Justin, did you pull out the fucking thesaurus for this shit?
Oh my God. Like, why is he so angry? I don't understand. There's nothing in this movie that warrants that dire of
this was unnecessary. Unnecessary, Justin.
Like, who hurt you?
Yeah, who hurt you, Justin? My gosh. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna read this Slant Magazine 63. It says, The Holdovers is ultimately about the absence of family. And as it watches three individuals come together and apart, it's subtly attuned to the way that class constricts people's lives.
Very nice. Let's see. Do we have one from Consequence?
I don't see one.
I'm not seeing. Oh, here we go. Here we go. It's 91.
Okay, it's really high.
It's very, very high. I'm gonna read it just because The Holdovers is the easiest possible recommendation. A perfect time capsule of a kind of movie that may not be totally extinct. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm gonna read the 100 from Washington Post. It says, filmed in subdued tones of burnished browns, The Holdovers might be best described as the movie version of that favorite pair of corduroys that miraculously still fit. Stylish, if a little worn in places, softened by time, and made more generous by the life lived inside them.
That's so cute.
I know.
That is the cutest little blurb I've ever heard.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you, Anne Hornaday. That was amazing.
Oh my gosh. The cutest blur by the cutest named person. My goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
I personally think this movie was fantastic. I've been watching a lot of great movies at the end of the year, you know, for these Oscars coming up, and it's just really blowing me. Every year when I watch these movies, I get even more blown away by how good they are and just how much not as good movies I watch for the rest of the year. So it really just, you know, when you compare them, it's like, oh my God, like, you know, there is a reason some of them get nominated for Oscars and there's a reason some don't. It's just, you see it. You see it in movies like this.
It's crazy to think. I know I for sure went through like my snobby movie phase where I was just shitting on bad movies just to shit on bad movies. Like, oh, well, it's not this movie. But like, I don't know if it's, you know, I'm 30 now.
You are. Happy birthday.
I'm officially 30. Yes, I have been for the past couple days. And I've now come to appreciate a good shitty movie because, hey,
yeah,
life's short and you just gotta like what you like.
Oh
and
yeah.
If it makes you happy, then it's a good movie. If it's good to you, it's a good movie. That's all I gotta say about that. But I do love a good Oscar nominated movie. If this even gets nominated. I mean, again, this is before the Oscar noms are out. But I'd be very surprised if this didn't. This movie was very good. And I hope it does.
Yep.
But this is just the beginning. We have so many to watch.
Well, I've actually been doing pretty good. Gotta catch up with me.
I'm very behind.
I'm kind of several ahead of you at this point, so, you know.
That's very true. Well, we're gonna make it work. Have some time to catch up. You will be gone for a little bit, so I will hopefully use that time wisely. Who's to say I will? Who's to say I will? But
yeah, it's...
but I will do my best. Oh man. All right. Anything else we had? We didn't have too much to say about this movie because ultimately we liked it, and it's
that's what happens sometimes, you know.
If we like a movie, we don't have much to say. It's just good. It's really good.
I recommend it. It's great. Yes. Like I would watch it again. I would.
You know, I'd probably watch this again. I think I would.
Yeah.
Would I watch Breakfast Club again first? Yes.
Yeah.
But this was very good, and I think I would watch it again. All right. Is that all we have to say about that?
Yep.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and IMDb. We are also on Amazon Music, Spotify, and Acast. You can email us at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.